Hello, and welcome to Lit Service, where we are fans of fiction and purveyors of dodgy writing advice. My name is Caitlin Sangster, and if you could choose between being a stabber or a kisser in a book, which would you be?
I mean, I would be a kisser. I in fact, took briefly fencing when I was in college, like kind of bootleg fencing, like much like dodgy writing advice, which I love. I also did some dodgy fencing.
Nice.
And I was terrible at it because I found it very hard to stab people. I kept being like, oh, I'm so sorry. So sorry. Sadly, I am not going to be good in a fight.
I took some very dodgy fencing classes that were like in some business after all the lights had been turned out. And it was like a bunch of engineers who were wearing like the fencing gear. Mm-hmm. I'm not an engineer. My dad worked for the business and I went as like a 13-year-old and wanted to learn how to stab people. But mostly was like, I'm in a room full of adult men. This is weird. And didn't stab people. So I can identify with not wanting to stab people.
My son is taking fencing now, though, with his dad, and they are both stabbing people. So I'm hoping that they will, at the end, you know, when the end times come, I'm hoping that they will they will be the stabbing people. And I don't know what I will do. I will have to come up with some kind of skill.
Nice. You can entertain everybody. You can talk everybody into yeah.
Tell your tales like a bard.
A big welcome to Holly Black, the number one New York Times bestselling author of many fantasy novels, including the novels of Elfheim, The Coldest Girl in Cold Town, The Spiderwick Chronicles, and her adult debut, Book of Night. When is book two for that coming, by the way? That's the worst question to ask any author.
Well, no, thank you so much for having me. I'm writing it right. I have 20,000 words of it done.
Woo! Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. There's more.
No.
There's more introduction because Holly Black is so amazing. She has been a finalist for an Eisner Award and the Lodestar Award and the recipient of the
Mythopoeic. I just like to put it in there to mess with people.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm glad you did because now I know how to pronounce it. A Nebula and a Newbery Honor. Her books have been translated into 32 languages worldwide and adapted for film. She currently lives in New England with her husband and son in a house with a secret library. Author goals. Her newest book, the second in the Solan Air duology, The Prisoner's Throne, came out yesterday, or it will have when this comes out.
So. I was like, oh no!
I missed it. No, this episode will be coming out the day after the book comes out. So tell us all about the Solan Air duology, Holly.
When I was partway through writing Queen of Nothing, I realized that I really wanted to tell the story of the sort of feral, weird little queen, Queen Soren. And also, I was really interested in Oak's story. In particular, like the fact that there's so much had been done to sacrifice for him, you know, his specifically Jude, but also, you know, his mom and, you know, to some extent, Vivi. They'd done a lot to make sure his childhood was okay. But there's no way to make his childhood okay. He was cut out of the dying body of his birth mother, even if he doesn't remember it. He is the reason, to some extent, there's a whole war. Mm-hmm. You know, he is responsible, no matter how much he doesn't want to be responsible, or how much he wasn't personally responsible, his existence has been responsible for a lot of death. And I don't know that you can make that okay, but what you can do is do a lot to try to make it okay. And then that person probably has some feelings about how they have to seem okay, even if they're not. And so I was super interested in that. And I was really interested in Soren, in Ren, because she had a story that was parallel to Jude's in some ways, but opposite.
Absolutely. And I feel like all of us were really interested in those stories too. So I'm really glad that you decided to write a duology about these two characters. And like the contrast between them is so much fun, so interesting. So what we'd like to talk about this week is character development and arcs, which I think is especially fun with these two characters. So just to start off, how do you go about brainstorming characters for your books?
A lot of times character is the thing I start with. So it's the thing where I can't really write until I feel like I know them to some extent, even though they're going to grow and change over the course of especially the first book in a series. Like, I feel like the way they grow and change over the second and third book is about them evolving, but the first book is about figuring out really who they are. And I am willing to, throughout the first book, radically change who they are if I don't feel like it's working. Like, they're, to me, immensely malleable in that first book. Whereas in subsequent books, you know, I feel like, okay, I know who they are. there's ways that they can grow, but they, people who are real enough to extrapolate from rather than reinvent. But with the first book, I'm willing to be like, okay, I thought it was, this character was this way, but they're not. And that's sometimes hard. Like, I think I want to figure out what their secrets are. You know, I want them to have secrets. I want them to have that central, often bad belief about themselves. I want to figure out what is their wound, or what is the crucible in which they were formed? What is their central trauma? What are their relationships like with people? What kind of friendships did they have? What kind of relationships before we got to know them did they have? Mm-hmm. You know, I want to try and go through that stuff. And that's the stuff where, especially in a first book, I'm pretty willing to change. When I first sat down to figure out Ren, I had to figure out a lot about how she lived. And originally I thought about trying to make her somebody who had come back feral, but had come back and was living in a family unit and living semi-feral inside a family and like in a school and having to navigate that stuff. And it was really hard to do. It was a needle that I could not thread, and like figuring out she never went home really was the thing that let me write the book.
You mentioned that you like your characters to have secrets. Are they secrets from the reader or secrets from everybody else?
Ideally, there's different kinds of secrets. I want them to have a secret that maybe we don't find out immediately. So in that way, it's a secret from the reader. But I also want them to have some secrets from themselves, like some stuff that they're not willing to tell themselves or that they're not willing to acknowledge about themselves.
That, I assume, goes a lot into the character arc, is discovering those things and then dealing with them.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing is, like, I was talking about this today with what I did with Lizzie, who I did Spider Work with. I was talking about how much, there's so much writing advice that really is backwards engineering. It's like, here's a piece of writing advice. Just if you follow these simple steps that no human being could ever follow, right?
Right.
Then you would just know. You would just get all the answers. Mm-hmm. And they are so demoralizing.
Oh, yeah.
When you're a writer and you read these books that are telling you how to do it, and you think, but what is the ladder that gets you from step A to step B? Because you're talking about these things like they're related, but they're often not related. Like, for instance, I could say, sure, you know, you want to come up with a secret, but as a writer, you're like, what secret? Mm-hmm. No, really, what secret? And you may well write several versions of a book where you change the secret.
Oh, yeah.
And I think all writing advice, I'm not going to say all, because there's a lot of great writing advice, but there's a lot of books that sort of are like step one, step two, and you're like, you can't, you know, I don't know any writer who's at least one step is not lie on the floor and cry.
I know.
Right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I feel like so much writing advice is unhelpful because it's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And you feel like you have to do it all first. When I feel like the thing that helps me the most when I listen to writing advice is when I already have a draft and I'm like, oh, I could fix it here.
Right.
Or I could do this. Like I can't think about more than one thing at once. I'm like, right now I'm drafting. I can't think about drafting well. I have to go back and fix it later.
You're absolutely right. Like a lot of times that is when I come to sort of structural stuff to be like, oh, remind me now that I've broken this thing. What I could do to fix it.
Yeah. Or like, here's the boring part. What would make this more interesting? Or would this be cooler if we didn't know about this until the third part of the book?
But I don't think there's anybody who can write it right until they write at least some of it wrong.
Oh, well, yeah. That's the value of rewriting. If you don't plan on rewriting your book at least 10 times, you're going to run out of energy before you ever get to the end. Yeah. So how do you use the backstory of your character to move your narrative forward? You're great at using backstory and even flashbacks sometimes.
Well, I think a lot of times, I've talked about how, like, I feel books are often a perfectly created torture device for the protagonist. Mm-hmm. If they have a secret, it's coming out. If they have a fear, they'll be facing it.
Absolutely.
Right? And also, like, a lot of times, in terms of the way magic exists in that world, a lot of times it's calibrated. Like in Book of Night, the way shadow magic had to do with the shadow in psychology and the way that we're not acknowledging certain kinds of things and all of that stuff dovetails. And because of that, I think you have to create backstory while you're still writing. You're not going to be able to, like, well, like, all of those sheets, right? Just fill out the sheet. You can't. No. Right? So what happens is a lot of times I'm writing story and then I'm thinking, is there a backstory that connects to this? Mm-hmm. How can I connect these pieces what's an interesting thing that because I've created this piece of narrative, what's an interesting way this character might have experienced it before? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't realize this thing, you know, is how the world works. Well, how did the character find that out? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes you can know that stuff beforehand, but a lot of times you are creating both things in a sort of staggered pattern, I think.
Mm-hmm. I feel like people get so overwhelmed and worried about having all the pieces on the table. And it's not like that at all, because your character, like you said, you can throw out an entire character arc like halfway through the book and mm-hmm. be like, this isn't working. And so I think it's the same with backstory. Like, as you go, mm-hmm. you can be like, wouldn't it be so cool if she was scared of heights because she got held out over a cliff when she was a child, right. you know? Like, and I love what you said about backstory or current difficulties for your character having to be faced. I feel like people go through those lists and they're like, their favorite color is red and they're scared of heights and they love to keep their hands very clean. But if you don't actually incorporate that into your story, then it doesn't matter at all.
Right. And also why? Like, why are yeah. they afraid of heights?
Yeah.
I mean, why do they want to keep their hands clean? Like, in life, often actually that stuff is more of a mystery. But in narrative, you know, we want a why, right? Stories are about us making sense of the world. And so you may write a story in which the reason is not there. And that's part of creating verisimilitude. But a lot of times you're creating a story for your story. And those things alone are not resonant. What makes them resonant is how that character psychologically got there, so that we viscerally believe in their fear of heights because we remember the bad thing that happened to them.
So how do you use the actions your character takes and their backstory to set the expectations for what kind of book you were writing? What's going to happen in this book?
I mean, I think that it took me a long time to realize, like, the thing that happens on page one is setting a certain kind of expectation for the reader, about you're making a reader promise. This is the book you're in. This is the story I'm going to tell you. If you like this part, you know, this kind of writing will happen again. This kind of movement will happen again. And I think there's a lot, again, of advice about making a really exciting first sentence, making a really exciting first chapter, but without thinking, is this exciting in the way the rest of my book is going to be exciting? You are setting yourself up for a situation in which you will not have the right reader. You can have a great cover, but what you need is a great cover for the book you wrote. And it's better to have like a cover that maybe isn't the most, it doesn't have to be a perfect cover. It has to be the cover that tells people, this is what's inside this book. If this is the kind of thing you like, you will enjoy it.
A book that I liked quite a bit, but I feel like is the result of that whole first line thing. It starts with, oh, I met this character on the day the beheadings were announced. And then nothing else about the book was about beheadings. It was nonfiction and there were actual beheadings, but they weren't a part of the story. I remember just feeling so cheated for the rest of the book that there were no beheadings.
You're like, when will the beheadings begin?
When is the machete going to come out and we're all going to fight the people beheading people? Yeah. Which I love about the Cruel Prince series, because you start out very, very clearly saying this is a book about a conflict between a daughter and her father and murder. You know, like we know the whole time murder is definitely on the table and it's all between Jude and her dad. I love that.
It was a fun thing to write that beginning. And it really did make, like, it was the thing I wrote first. It is to me like the crucible in which these characters, all of the girls are, you know, are made. It was fun to do. I had written a kind of brutal beginning to Coal Town. Mm-hmm. And I remembered how much I loved having that be the beginning. And so I thought, oh, I'd like to do something similar.
We know what's in Holly Black's mm-hmm. soul. Brutal.
Well, so you know what's coming, right? So that yeah. then we can go to like a fancy ball and we're not, we understand. We
will this not isn't about the dancing. Right. This is about the knives in people's coat pockets. Yeah, absolutely. So what is your favorite part about building characters?
I love, and a lot of times, especially like in a first book, this doesn't happen till the very end. I love the moment when I feel like I know them so well that I can start putting them into any, you know, I can put them into any situation and I start being able to sort of generate easily how they feel. And when I actually started The Cruel Prince, I had been writing a couple standalones and I had gotten to the point where I was like, I'm so tired of getting to know people at the very moment I am saying goodbye to them. Mm-hmm. I want to spend some time with people that once I get to know, like I get to actually then keep them. Mm-hmm. But I love that moment when you just know them. You actually know them.
For sure. I remember So my debut was a trilogy. And I remember writing books 2 and 3 and everybody complaining about their book 2 and how hard it was for them. And I'm like, this isn't bad at all. And it was because I knew the characters so well. I'd spent years writing this book and rewriting this book and I knew these characters. So I could just write the rest of the series just fine. And I love being comfortable in that space. And then as soon as I jumped into a new series, I was like, why is this so hard?
I love book 2. I don't understand why people don't like book 2. Book 2 is the best. Book 1 is all set up. It's a lot of work. Book 3 is all payout. Yeah. That's also, you got all these bills to pay. Yeah. Right? Book 2 is pure character torture end to end. It's a delight. You make everything worse for everyone you love. It's amazing.
So what is the thing you are most proud of about The Prisoner's Throne?
I think that one of the puzzles, so when I wanted to write a duology, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to do was try to do something with the form that I couldn't do in a different form, because I'd never written a duology before. And so I wanted to write, you know, one book that was Ren's point of view and then one book that was Oak's point of view. Ooh, awesome. And have them connect. No time overlap, but they have sort of memory overlap. And it was hard. I knew that eventually we would see the characters from Elfheim. And I also knew that anytime we were in Oak's point of view, even if we weren't seeing them, we would know about them because we would know what he knows. And I think the thing that I'm proud of doing, but was really hard, is being able to take Ren and Oak back to Elfheim and put them in a story there that's still got to be their story. Because it's really, like, it's hard to not have these characters that I do know super, super well and who are very competent and clever, like, overwhelm the narrative. I wanted there to be enough of them that we will enjoy seeing them. And I wanted them also not to be the protagonists and not to overwhelm the protagonists.
That's true. I mean, we all love seeing the cameos. As soon as you get back into Elfheim, we're all waiting to see Jude and Cardin and all of our old friends. But yeah, you definitely wanted... I love how it stayed right with the new characters.
I mean, I think it was really useful to have Rand's book, you know, to have a book in which we don't even know who they are, really. We're like, sure. And then, so we get to know those, like, we had a minute to be away from them and then, you know, hopefully establish the characters enough that we can stay with them.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It was lovely to have you.
It was so nice to get to hang out with you and get to talk about writing.
We do have special editions of the Stolen Air duology on sale in our store with pretty stenciled edges. Be sure to check them out. They'll come with a signed book plate. Thank you for that, Holly. And feature art adapted from a portrait of Ren by Joey Cow, which is designed for the books and painted by me. Yay! So thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.